interview with John Larry Dodge of Maeslick, Kentucky on January 20th, 1987. The interviewer is Lynn David. Okay, you say you heard a story about a guy hung on Johnson Hill, right?
Right.
What do you know about it?
All I know, I heard my grandfather and I'm talking. If a black guy either raped or murdered a white lady in Maple or in that vicinity, and he's either taken away here for safekeeping or was trying to get away and being brought back by the sheriff's department, the law officers, and he was met by mob on Johnson Hill and taken away and was hung on a telephone pole.
Okay, where's Johnson Hill?
It's on US 68. It's about what? The edge of Mason and Fleming County line. It's on the old road. About 4 miles from here, from Maeslick.
From Maeslick.
4 miles south.
You don't remember the name?
I don't remember any names. I heard my grandfather talk about it, and they knew some of the people that was into it.
But John, could it be a telephone pole or a tree?
Did your grandfather ever say who some of the people were involved in it?
Yes, some. He thought he didn't know for sure. He didn't know anybody for sure, but who they thought were into it.
You remember any of the names?
Yeah, well, I ain't gonna mention.
They should be dead by now, shouldn't they?
Yeah, they're dead.
What year would have been that? About when this began?
I don't have any idea.
Early 1900s, 1920s, 30s?
I'd say in the early 1900s, I just guessing. Yeah. But I've heard, heard comments from some of the people they thought were in on.
I've heard one name, and the man just died, but I didn't know whether you knew any others or not. I thought maybe some of their families might have been known. Okay, were you born in Maeslick? Was your dad and mom from Maeslick originally,
yeah,
too?
Yeah, here in the old age of Flemington, yeah. My grandmother was born and raised in this area. My grandfather, he migrated here from over Southern Ohio. Great-grandfather migrated down here and worked for a while and returned. He was 104 when he died, huh? He was married 2 or 3 times.
Lived that long, probably. What was your great-grandfather's name?
Harm Dodge.
What was your grandparents' name then?
My grandfather's name was Eddie Dodge, and my grandmother was McGee.
Molly McGee. Molly McGee?
Uh-huh, I love that.
And your folks, what were their names?
My dad, he was Eddie Dodge's son. He was the oldest of 5 boys. And my mother was a Crockett. And they originated from this area over in Nipton and Flemington. Nipton and Lyville and that area.
So you got deep roots here.
Yeah. I've been on this farm since I was born.
How long's that been? It's worth a try.
Born in 39. Mm-hmm. House still standing right back here.
Log.
Yeah, log house.
Now, how far back does this farm go in the family?
Well, it don't belong to us. My parents were married and lived 2 or 3 places. So they went to housekeeping right down the road. Then they moved to Flemington and then they rented a farm and moved back. Well, it's right back on part of this farm then. And that's where I was born at. And Dad and Mom lived there. I think he moved back there in 37 or 36 or 7. I was born in 39. And 46, we moved up here in this house.
Yes.
This is a bigger farm. Lived back there at that time, long ago. This is the Alice Mikey, that farm did. And this farm at that time belonged to Zoe Israel Grover place, but Harvey Collins had bought it. And Mr. Harvey sold the Browning.
Is that like Brownies Manufacturing in Mainesville?
Same outfit. And then Dad moved up here, and I've been here all my life, practically.
What were your parents' names then?
John and Oprah Dodge.
Okay.
And my mother was a Crockett. Her father was a Crockett.
Now, is that the Crocketts?
There are some descendants of David. Man.
You know how far back that name goes.
What, David Crockett?
How far back?
Oh, well, everything goes back to France. It's the French name. The Crockett Dane. In 16th century.
Y'all been able to trace it that far back? That's great.
We got just no books and legends of where the great great grandfather Crockett ran a store in Bethel, Kentucky.
Now where's Bethel?
It's on Kentucky 11 between Flemingsburg and Mount Sterling.
And you've got the ledgers for?
I found the ledgers, yeah. Mom's got them. They might be here somewhere now. I don't know exactly. Some of the junk. We got stuff here from my great uncles, great great grandfather, grandfather, great grandfather.
You know, you're lucky to have all that.
What Mom hadn't got, we got here for a lot of stories.
Yeah.
But those ledgers date back into the 18th. Something in Bethel, 1867, before you traded the rabbits for groceries and eggs for groceries. Well, you didn't buy groceries then, you bought flour and coffee and sugar and salt.
Yeah.
And it's real interesting, the ledger you had. And the handwriting was penmanship for the others were.
They really could write nice. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Hey, that was your great-grandfather, right?
Well, I can't say it was my great-grandfather, but grandfather, great, way back, great, 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 great.
Way back.
Yeah.
Do you remember your grandfather at all, and your grandmother?
Yeah. My grandfather. Dad right over here on my mother's side. Grandmother died in there. My grandfather on my daddy's side died in that room. My grandmother and my daddy's side died in the hospital. Amazing.
So you were up in years before you lost them.
Yeah.
Did you ever hear him tell any stories about when they were young or how things were done?
Yeah. Now, my grandfather Crocker, not a whole lot on him because he died in 49. Don't remember a lot of his. And then my grandfather dies when he dies.
70.
He's a very quiet person, but you get him talking, he can tell you a lot of tales of things that happened.
Remember any of the tales?
Oh, yeah. A few of them. Of course, a lot of them, I don't know where they're all, you know, some of them are kind of sketchy. But about to hang on Johnson Hill. And then, through my relationship with people in Mayfield, like some of the older people, I picked up a lot of tales. Some of them's probably actual happening, some of them probably not.
Well, now you tell me earlier about a lost town. Was that something your grandpa told
well,
you about? Or?
Now it comes through on the farm we live on, right? On the back part of the farm, there was a little village back there at one time, several houses. And I could pinpoint where four houses were now, and their water supply. One of the houses is still there. And through some of the landowner had a brother that done some history. And he claimed that that town was what they call a lost town, a little town back. Part of it's on this farm, part of it's on Gene Watson's place. And yeah, just on these two farms.
They know it have a name for that town or anything?
They called it the Lost Town. That's the only thing I could pick up. The guy that We didn't know anything about it. Of course, we knew all these houses were there.
Yeah.
And water supplies, there were wells around, and Mr. John Browning, the one that bought this for him when we moved here. He had a brother that lived in New York. I was visiting him one day, and they were out here observing the farm, riding over it. And he was telling me about there being a little place back in there, and it was called the Lost Town. That's, and they figured that's about what it was.
Settlement that just didn't make it.
Location. But now, other than that, I don't know anymore about it. Then right on down the creek, what we call Flat Fork. I've heard Daddy say, and there's a lane that runs back in there to this day that's used by a neighboring landlord. And there's evidently a little town back in there with a few houses on. And part of it's be on the Everett Hills Brand Farm or Charles Allison place. A few houses back there now. That could have been it, but I'm not sure.
Yeah. You mean another town besides this one on the back of this place?
Little village. Evidently, I heard talk about it. Now, I've heard a lot of talk about Banyan Hill. Banyan Hill's over. Off of the Helena Pike. Back on the road where we go to Betty Mason Farm. Several houses back there at one time. Evidently, one person lived back there with Mr. Charlie Ewan. And Charlie Ewan would be, you know, Alan Bowden? Rides a school bus?
Yeah,
his
okay.
Father-in-law, if I ain't mistaken. And heard about some more people live back there.
Lives
people,
there now or did live?
No, they did live there. What happened, the people died. Their houses would either burn or fell down, and within time, evidently the land was on the fence farm, and it was just swallowed up, just disappeared. But I heard a lot of talk about the little town of Banyan Hill, even from my uncles and my father. But the only one I remember living there was Mr. Charlie Ewan lived there.
The
color fella lived down the main lake. Remember Charlie very well.
They'd say anything about the people, or maybe anything that happened in that town, or just that people lived there?
It was just a little town, and I think it was mostly black people lived there. At that time, and right across the road there, I don't know if you've got anything on it or not, where Betty Mason lives now, it's part of the Hawkins land. It used to be a college or a girls' school or something there.
I don't have anything on that.
There was where Betty Mason lives. You have to talk to her. But yeah. I don't know if Betty knows any details or not. The guy that owned it before her, what was that guy's name that lived there? Oh, who was that guy's name? He got all kinds of money. Owns the farm down across from the Park Drive.
Church?
Archie Church. That's where he come to when he first moved this country. He lived there for a while, evidently.
Now, when you say he came to this country, did he come from another, from overseas, or from to this area?
He just came to this area, from my understanding. And if that was a girls' school or a college or something, I don't know.
Well, that's something I never heard.
But it would. Betty might be able to fill in some more details.
Yeah, I'll talk to Betty about it.
It's an interesting topic.
Betty's house? I don't think I've ever been there. But I'll get a hold of her and ask her. You were also telling me, before we turned on the tape recorder, something about an old cave.
Well, it's down on Billy Ross owns a farm now. It's on down on old 68.
Now where Barb Boone lives?
Where Barbara Boone lives. It's between there and Mays Lick on a bank along the road. And my father's, we call Uncle Dave McGee, and his sons live down there. And his sons found this cave. And evidently went way back under the road. And Lynn McGee, and Lynn is still living in Cincinnati. He's been in it. But what? He's the only one today that could tell you where it is, and it might not even be there. But he claimed, they even claimed it went back under where the new road goes through now. It went back that far.
They see anything in the cave? Or
evidently not. Just a crawl space. Evidently, I don't work. I'd have to ask Liam, I don't work memory, he was just a kid.
Yeah.
But there was a cave there in that bank, and I've heard my uncle, well, my uncle Tom, Glenn was really his name, Uncle Tom, talked about it. And Liam said, Liam been in it, so he knew it was there. He used to go back in.
But you never been able to find it?
No, I never looked, really.
That'd be sort of neat to find, wouldn't it?
It would.
I like stuff like that. Hmm?
Yeah.
Do what? We'll try to find something.
My son's been looking for it.
Have you asked Billy or Barbara?
I don't think he knows a thing about it.
I bet it's hardly anybody knows. He knows anybody except Uncle Liam. Yeah. He's one of the last of, you know, the family that grew up in that area.
And he's living in Cincinnati now?
Mm-hmm. He was captured by the Germans in World War II. And the family only weighed 90 pounds. And he still suffers some of the effects of it.
Yeah.
In captivity for I don't know how long.
Well, if you see him or you know, get a hold of him.
About the only time I seen him was a funeral or a reunion or something.
Oh, reunion. Well, I hope, let's hope you have a reunion.
But the McGee's, again, on my grandmother's side, she had a brother named Uncle Dave McGee. He had several children. Was the first cousin of my father. And then they were around here, and Uncle Dave had a brother named Les, which was my grandmother's brother. And Les, I can tell you some good stories about him. Les. He's still living. He was 80-something. And then there was an Uncle Jim McGee, who was kin to my grandmother. Where he was an uncle. Dad and them always called him Uncle Jim. But I'm not sure where his dad and them's uncle or great uncle. But now he's a blacksmith, amazingly. Big guy. That worked in Howard's blacksmith shop, right there where Mr. Woods is building his name.
Yeah.
He did all the blacksmith work. Horses didn't get too big or bad for him to shoot. And he was right smart of a character. Evidently. He's buried in Maze Lake Cemetery by one of his several wives.
How many wives did the man have?
I don't know. But I've always heard talk about Uncle Jim, the horses didn't get too big or bad for him to shoot. And they said that, I think it was Howard that run the blacksmith shop or owned it, and they made wagons, horse wagons and buggies and all that kind of stuff. And they said they'd make a horse wagon, and Uncle Jim would go get the frame and carry it in there and set it down by itself and make all the iron work for it.
That was a big man.
Evidently was. He was another John Henry, I think. Now, my uncle's got some pictures of him, but I haven't seen him for a long time. I don't think there's any of them here. Uncle Jim was always the first one around here to ever make a tobacco spear. And I've got it. It's here.
Now, you mean nobody made them before he?
Nobody. Tobacco was always split with a hand knife, split down the stalk, cut off, and put over a sharp-pointed stick. But as times changed, the whole stalk was cut. Once the whole stalk, you couldn't get it over a stick. So Uncle Jim made a spear, forged it himself, put on the end of the stick, spear tobacco. And it was given to my father, and I still got it. Sitting there in the drawer now.
Well, now, is this something that he came up with on his own, or did he hear it from somebody else?
No, he came up with it on his own.
They use them all over now, don't
they?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Well, Jim was the first one to ever make one that anybody knows about.
Yeah.
Well, Jim, he liked his women, evidently.
Why'd he like his women?
I don't know. Now, they said that when he breathed, he sounded like a windbroken horse.
Why would the women like him?
But he's a big stout muscular man. Uncle Les Stutter, of course, several people may still know about Uncle Les. And He was raised around Mighty Lick. He's still an old bachelor. He hadn't driven for years. He used to drive, and one night him and some girl coming home from Maisel on a Model A Ford, and us, he went to kiss her, and forgot where he's going. He run up a guy who on a telephone pole and like to kill a boat, wrecked his car, and then drove sink.
You say he's alive and still around Maisel Lake?
No, he's over, lives in Germany.
Lives in Germantown.
Yeah. But some of the things he can tell you happened.
I'd like to talk to him.
What does he say? How you doing? Sometimes it takes him 5 minutes to get the word out. But he used to live back there on the Jolly Farm then. Brick house, and Uncle S used to walk to Maisel Lick. And Uncle S would go through the cemetery. And the boys would try to scare him. Uncle S used to carry a gun. And he broke the habit up of scaring him. Uncle S used to hang around my leg. He used to chicken fight.
Now, what's chicken fight?
Well, they fought game chickens.
Oh.
Maisel Lick a whole lot. Uncle S used to be in with him. He drank and gambled a little bit. One Sunday morning, of course, this was during Prohibition, evidently. I heard him tell about Uncle S. It's bootlegger Maisel Lick, bootlegging moonshine. And the town marshal and the county sheriff were in town that morning, and they were watching this bootlegger. And the bootlegger picked up Uncle S, took him up to Baptist Church, and had 2 gallon of whiskey left. And he soaked Uncle S, because Uncle S was about half drunk. So Uncle S takes the moonshine, he goes down through Maisel Lick, has a jug in each hand, just swinging it and walking right on. And town marshal or constable, whatever he was, and the sheriff was standing on the corner and said, Lesson, what you got there? He said, dust, by God, I got my 2 gallon of moonshine, kept walking, and the bootlegger got away, and they thought Uncle S was kidding. He thought he had cola or something to it. Uncle S took his cola or his moonshine. Dust, by God, I got 2 gallon of moonshine. They thought he was kidding. Now, I've heard some of the older guys in Maisel Lick tell about it. Mr. Bob Phillips and them, they still laugh about it. Les going through Maisel Lick that moonshine.
And they were waiting to catch the moonshine.
They were after the bootlegger, and Les had it and was going on with it. He bought it.
Know who the bootlegger was?
No, I don't at that time. But at that time, it was a guy around here, Benema. What was his name? Was it Elmer Downing? Something was working for the Federal Revenues. And he was around here at that time, and he was even there. But Uncle S got through the town for money. You ought to hear him tell about some of the things they've done. I heard Mr. Orville Watson, his junior daddy, and he's 90-something like that. So him and Les went to load the back, and said they got less moonshine, got drunk, said they never did get the back.
Well, at least they had a good time doing it. Was there a lot of moonshine around here? Do you hear a lot of stories about it?
Mostly bootleggers. I never. There's only one fellow that made him around here, and that's been hadn't been too many years ago. The name of Leo King. He ran a little service station here in town for a while, and he made it right down the holler right down here. Smell it. And I knew he made it. And he got shot in Maisel Lick in the filling station. You know where Wave again and them got the little hut there? Well, it used to be a service station. And Leo run it, and him and another fella, and they drank. And we called it the Boar's Den, and played cards there, and sold a little gas, and drank a little whiskey. And Leo and another fella had some problems. A fella walked in there one night with a gun and shot him, killed him right there.
The cat you killed him?
Yeah. Thought the guy killed him. Well, he'd give himself up. He lived right down the road. He got a year or two in the FEMA. He's still living.
A year or two?
Yeah, a couple of years ago. He made it like it was self-defense. That the king was a bad man. And he was so drunk and so weak. He couldn't have got out of bed because I was in there the night it happened. He lived in that old building. He traded guns and knives, old fella did. And kept a gun under the bed with him. He always kept right smart money on him. He always kept a gun under the bed. And I went to some of the trial, and they tried, the fella that got killed, they tried him for a bad man, and got to kill him for a good man.
What year was this?
I can't remember. It was back in the early, '60s, as well as I remember. It's about the last killing scrape that I know about around here.
Were there, you ever hear about any other shootings in Maisley?
Oh, yeah, several. There's one I can remember very well. It was a McVeigh boy shot his brother down in the public well, family feud one night. McVeigh boy lived on the back of this farm and borrowed the gun and shot his brother with, and the boy that worked for us. And the rest more deal over that.
When that happened?
I'd say early 50s, just guessing.
Did he borrow the gun deliberately to shoot him, or?
Yeah, he borrowed the gun. They had a feud down at the Pullman. These brothers migrated in here from Bath County, and they were nice people, but they didn't want nobody crossing one another. If they did, then they'd get you, man. That's all it was took. And one brother shot the other. Lived on the back of this farm, and I don't know, I don't think he got it. No, he never got over 2 or 3 years in the pen.
So shoot somebody in May's lip and you won't spend much time in jail.
Right.
But I remember his name was Prince McVeigh, and he worked for us part of the time. Him and his brother had some problems. He claimed his brother drawed a knife on him. He went home and borrowed a gun from a sale boy that worked for us. And went back to Mays Lick, and his brother come out with a knife, and he took the gun and shot him right there by the mother's whip.
Good Lord. Did you ever hear any stories of some earlier?
Well, I've heard some early ones. Down where Bill Cropper's building is, before the old farm machinery place. Swartz is running an international harvester dealership there. Mr. Billy Collins was in partners with him at one time. And there's an old theater in that building, in a dance hall. Of course, the building's gone, and I can remember because I worked there. But Mr. Swartz told me about it one night. There was some disagreement, and there was a guy shot and killed there. Outside that building one night, over a disagreement. I heard Ken Stoggle say something about it.
What, did that be in about the 20s, or?
I'd say back in the every bit of it. Now, in that building at one time, I don't know if anybody's mentioned to it or not, but it was a Delco plant. And that furnished electricity for Mays Lick.
Who's they?
Mr. Swartz run it, but now I don't know who the Delco plant belonged to, but they furnished electric for Mays Lick. It's for the head electric lines out here. And had a power generator in there and had the batteries sitting around. They charge all these batteries up in the furnished electric. And Mr. Bill stayed down there and everybody loafed at 9 o'clock at night. At 9 o'clock, he blinked the lights twice, turned the generator off.
That was it.
And the lights went off for Mays Lick.
They still do that.
Yeah, it doesn't take a generator. I lose mine a lot.
But now Miss Swartz has told me about that. And then right across where Miss Virginia Reed lives now, used to be a big store there, a big country store, owned by a guy named George Disher.
Okay, just a second. store.
In addition store, and I reckon it's one of the bigger country stores we're around here. Anyway, Mr. George had some problems of some kind. He took strychnine.
He did what?
He took strychnine, set the store on fire, and went home and died in his front yard. And the store burnt. And that burnt the Swartz building up across the road. They had all these barrels of tar and stuff on the front of the porch, and they exploded. And it was an awful fire. And that burnt was in the 30s sometime. I've heard talk about it, but I can't remember. There's a big store there one night. You get dry goods, hardware, anything you want. And that's set right across where Virginia Reed is now.
Mays look heck like
I don't remember the building myself or her. Yeah. Talk. Mr. George Disher.
Don't know why he did it. Huh?
Don't know why he did it. He set it on fire. Took strychnine. Went up her and found him land. We didn't even make it home.
Maeslick's had quite a few fires, though.
Maeslick's burned up several times, from my understanding. Now I remember a few big fires in Maeslick. But now, evidently, where the pool room is down.
And when you say down, what do you mean?
Well, be north.
Toward Maysville.
There's a Methodist church sitting down there, and I'm not mistaken, it burnt. And it seemed like O.C. Bench run a store or a shoe shop or something across the road. It burnt. It seemed like some more buildings burnt there at one time. Now, up where Mr. Woods' machine shop is now, that's where the Howard blacksmith shop was, where Uncle Jim McGee worked. Yeah. And that burnt. And that was a humongous fire. They even went down to school, got the high school boys come up there and they fight it. And the Reese building right across the street, now where Cassie Holden got
used furniture.
You still see the fire damage at the top of that building.
But it was a fire then. When was that about? Do you have any idea?
Daddy and him still in high school, so I'd say in the 20s.
1930.
Yeah, the late 20s.
Yeah.
Late 20s, early 30s. When that burnt. Okay, it was an old color fella in Maeslick, the name of Taylor White. I don't know if anybody's mentioned Taylor White there, you're not. Mr. Foley might have. Taylor White burnt Maeslick up to a 3 count. He was blind.
All by himself?
He was a blind fella, colored fella. He run a store. And I can remember him, he used to cane bottom chairs. Where's his little rocker at? He did the bottom in it for mom once. Remember when he done it? He was blind.
Blind, but he could do that kind of work.
He could do that kind of work, and he could tell a dollar bill from a $5 bill or a $10 bill or a $20. He could make a change.
How could he do that?
The feeler.
But Bill's all feel alike.
And there's the chair. That's not. I've seen him put a bottom in that chair. That's not the one. It's wore out.
For heaven's sake.
But he came bottom that chair for mom. I remember him doing it. For like $5. Like it. But he run a grocery store. And Taylor, he took. Well, he's blind. And the corner there from where Mr. Wood's machine shop is down to where Bobby Suits is, he burnt that all up.
How'd he do it?
He just, the carelessness, one head burned himself, but really nobody knows. And then, my understanding back earlier, the bank up where Mr. Perry Collins is, he run a store in there one time or something. And he got that on fire and burnt that all up. Taylor did.
So what, did they run him out of town?
No, well, nobody remembers Taylor out of town. He's the only one in town that sold ice that I can remember. And they bring the deliver ice out here out of Mason. He had an ice house.
Where was that?
In the back of his building underneath of it. And they brought 100 pound of ice out there on Monday, delivered to him. When he sold it to you next Monday, if it wasn't bigger than your fist, it was still 100 pound of ice. I'm never gonna forget that. And convenience store. And I can remember this as well then. I was a little saver. You know, his mom seen about that chair. And he had a bell on the door. Somebody come in, that bell ring. He knows it's in there. He's sitting in the back of the store. He always worked on chairs and stuff. And another colored boy come in. He heard the bell ring. He was moseying around in there. And the colored boy picked up a loaf of bread. He started at the door, and Mr. Taylor picked up his knife. He always had his big knife and put his cane with. And he threw the knife and stuck in the door face and right in front of the guy. The guy dropped the bread and run.
Yeah.
You didn't fool Mr. Taylor. He'd get you.
I don't think I'd fool the blind man throwing a knife at me.
But he could make change. Don't ask me how he done it. Feel it. He could make you change right to the nickel. I can vividly remember him. I was just a kid. I don't know that he even started school. I remember Mr. Taylor was. Remember him telling. Well, I can remember when he burned up behind Mr. Wood's den. I remember that part. It seemed like later he went down before he'd go up in the toilet alley now and start another business there. And Mr. Buck Bolden run that for a little while. And the ice house that he built is still there, a little round brick thing.
Okay, I've seen that.
Okay,
yeah.
That's what it's built for, an ice house.
Right there on the corner of the alley.
Right. Just for an ice house. Buck Bolden. The last one sell out somebody's late. It was a block. And it came to the block then. It didn't come through. Right? Mm-hmm. 100 pound block. He wanted 50 pounds of bacon too. I can remember that real well. And then right behind the old Christian church parsonage.
Okay.
It was two houses burnt back there one night.
He do that too?
No. He didn't do that. Two houses burnt there one night. And I can remember that as a kid. See, we didn't have any fire departments then. Mm-hmm. We had one from Clemensburg. It was called in, and I happened to view part of that. That was something else. But it's been, of course, since we established the fire department in 65, there's been several.
Yeah.
Several fires, but nothing. The last one we had was a couple years ago. It was major in town. Of course, when the church caught on fire, I reckon it was major.
Where the Christian church caught
on fire. Yeah, it was set fire by arsonists.
Yeah. Well, I know we've had the fire down at Mason's. Has that been 2 years?
Yeah, that was minor. Fires like it are minor.
Must have happened to you.
When the Christian church, if you'd seen it, you thought you wouldn't give a dime for it.
Yeah.
But we managed to get the fire out, and we got the arsonists.
Yeah, well, I've seen the damage upstairs. You know,
we got the arsonists. Well, the whole top of things on fire.
Yeah. Do you ever, not trying to get away from fires particularly, but did you ever remember hearing about any distilleries around here, legal distilleries?
No.
Remember anybody talking about any of them?
Not right off hand.
Jerry?
I haven't heard anything about no legal distillery. There used to be a lot of tobacco prized in places around. We were prized tobacco when you used to buy it. People would come and buy tobacco and they'd take it to a designated barn and they what they call a prizing place. And they'd take the big wooden hoses, put the tobacco in, and they had a big screw that turned the hand and press the tobacco in. Now, I don't know if there's any of them left or not. There was one in the barn, 324 right out of Maze Liquor, where Charlie Boyd owns.
Yeah.
They was taken out when the barn was remodeled. There was a Allen Lake and Pike where, owns that barn now. Mr. DOT owns, it was a prizing barn out there. I think the screw is still in the barn. I can remember it, and then there's some more, but I can't,
Yeah.
There was a lot of that done around.
Do you know the people that did it? Could everybody do it?
No, it was certain people were going to boil it and prize it, hard enough to do it. And it was evidently taken to Helena, Wedonia, and Johnson Station, put on railroad cars and ships.
Shipped on out. I heard today that there was a mill at one time down on 324. The curve before you start up the hill to Clark's house. Did you ever hear anything about a mill van there?
There was a mill, and I can show you where it was at. This was called Nicholas Mill. The road that goes out past behind the motorcycle shop, according to the deed, is the Nicholas Mill Road. All right, you followed it around, but Mr. Stanley Lyons and they cut across to come out right by Bill Cropper farm over on 324. One back behind Bill Cropper's and one down over to Mill Creek. And there's a mill pond there and they call Houston Hole. It's a great fishing hole. And you can tell where the mill was at and some of the old grindstones, broke ones, are still there. That's the only mill I know of.
One of the days you ought to show me where that is.
I'm sure you, but it'll be a hell of a job to get there.
I can walk.
Well, I mean, on a frozen dry day, I saw I could drive back on the four-wheel drive on back to Bill Cropper's farm. Yeah. They go down a real steep hill. Now, you come in from the Cartman farm over on Fleming Road and get to it, but I don't know how to come that way.
You were telling me before we started the tape about you knew where there was a fairground out past where I live on the old Estill place.
My grandfather and them. Went past there, they said they used to have a fire down there. Now, what was the fire ground, or that's where they had it.
Now, is that on the farm I'm living on?
Well, it's on the farm that you're living on. The location is approximately where the new road is right now.
Right there,
where the new road is. From what I understand, what my grandfather said. He said he went to fire there.
Okay.
Now, I don't know if it was a one-day fire, two-day fire, or...
Yeah.
Or how large it was or anything, but I've heard him talk about it, and he said that was fairground.
Okay, that makes three fairgrounds I've heard about.
Okay, well, it could have been, said you didn't change the rim.
Yeah, well, I'm sure.
Well, did anybody ever tell you about the bandstand they left? Over the well?
Was it over the well?
It was over top of the well. Some pictures of it somewhere. Pete Pogue played in it. Tony Pogue played in it. Gil Latham played in it. Kenneth Stogler played in it. It was evidently up over the well. There's some pictures of it somewhere. I've seen it.
In this household, have you seen pictures of it?
No, not here. This household. There's some here, somewhere.
I'd like to see some pictures if we could find some.
But they played music there. Also, where Mr. Kitchen's building is, it used to be the IOOF lodge. And upstairs was the meeting hall and the skating rink up there. Heard my grandfather talk about skating there on Saturday night, and Ken Sasuke stopped the quarter there. And that's for the bank.
In Kitchens building.
Kitchens upstairs. That was hard for the floor of the skating rink. He even had basketball goals up front.
Okay, that's something I didn't know. What four corners in Maysville?
Well, at one time it's supposed to have been in Maysville. When it first started, it was four houses built. Crossroads or a cross path, whatever, and there's four houses, one on each corner.
Where was that? Do you have any idea?
And best of my knowledge, one of them is where Miss Parker owns. Can't think of people's name lives there. Sandy Parker owns.
Yeah.
I know where
the Carp House is.
Okay, that was one of them. The other one is where Joe Jolly lives now. And that's what I've been told.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And one of them was where it's down the corners, you go up the alley, colored alley, the old brick house.
Okay.
With Miss Lila Furman on. And the other one, I'm not sure, but it was behind the pool room there, and I'm not sure if it's that log house that belonged to Mr. Kitchen. Or where it is, but there's supposed to be a building on each corner of the intersection.
Those are all four of those are.
Well, three of them are low. Now, Miss Leela's was brick, and that's what got me confused. I thought they were all four low.
Those are far apart, though. I mean,
but the road wasn't where it is.
Well, that's true.
Yeah, the road wasn't where it is.
So all four of those houses are about the same age, then, or at least portions of
them. What I've been told, yeah. And Miss May Jolly's the one who told me some of this. And She's been here all her life. Miss May was what, in her 80s when she died.
Yeah.
And she's been dead a good while.
Well, I knew the Parker house was old, but I didn't. Yeah. I didn't date the others.
We're King James, see, it's old too.
Yeah, one end of it is.
Yeah. Now, I can remember where the fire hall is now. There was a barn there and a club named called the Dr. Tour, a blacksmith shop. I don't remember. He called him Dr. Tour, is all I can remember. He run a blacksmith shop down in Alabama, too.
Now, he ran one where the fire hall is and then one behind the pool hall?
Yeah, he ran one back there for a while in the old barn. Down behind Mr. Woods' place. Now, right behind him, where the pool hall is in there, was evidently the last deal, maybe. Chris Pepper had it torn down. I can remember it was a little building. Had bars over the windows and everything. I remember it. Chris had it torn down.
From inside or outside, do you remember it?
I can't remember. I remember when I was peeping in. Because I tell you what, it's full of slot machines.
The prisoners could play the slot machines while
they
were waiting?
They used the store slot machines because the Duncans back in probation time, honey, that was their business. They had slot machines over the country. That's where they made the money. Black market money. And
now, when you say Duncan, what Duncan?
Well, Ann Pepper's people. Chris's wife. Don't tell her I told you.
Yes, sir. Would not say it.
But evidently, some of her family, now I don't know what direct kin they were to her, had a little filling station there by the post office. Harry Duncan run it back during the war. Evidently, during probation, too. If you needed anything, you told Mr. Harry, if you had money, you could get it. Of course, back during the war, you know, he had everything was racing, sugar.
Yeah.
Tars, boots, anything. Toffee. And if you didn't have stamps, you could get your black market stuff up. Because I know her daddy talking about he needed a pair of boots real bad. War was going on, and then the boots couldn't get him. He told Mr. Tars, Mr. Tars got boots.
Good man to know.
Yeah. They had done had slot machines out over the country. That's the way they made the money. And then had the pool hall and the beer license made that. And they owned some land and they had traded a lot of mules and things where they made a lot of money too.
Must have been Missouri mules, right?
I don't know what kind of mules they were. That's farm where every other brand is now.
Did you ever hear any tales about Indians in Maysville?
No, I haven't heard any tales about Indians. We know in the back part of this farm, just as of last year, they put this on the National Historical List.
This farm?
Yeah, on the back of this farm, it was go and kick it out.
It's on the Historical Register.
Yeah, back called the Cherokee Valley back here, and there's mounds back here now, Evans of them. There's been some digging, there's been some rather some good historical stuff found out there. Refuge pits, been some graves found, been some valuable artifacts found back there.
It's prehistoric, it's not just
prehistoric.
It's been dug up by archaeologists.
The guy's name, he's from Aberdeen. He found a lot of good stuff back here. He found the guy's name, and when he died, donated to the university, High University. Well, I know it. And Doc Glass knows a little bit about it. He's found some stuff back here. But now, most it's been gone over, and I've never let him dig in the mounds. Not as long as I'm around here, nobody's going to dig in them either. But been a lot of stuff found back there, good stuff.
Yeah, I guess it's a good record of what went on before.
And they came in here, geological people, and they went through these refuge pits and found these bones and things. The dates back before the Indians, maybe.
Is that prehistoric?
Prehistoric, yeah. the bones and things they found.
It's,
we got some Indian relics here.
It's listed in the history.
Yeah,
yeah, it's listed in the mounds on the Flat Fork.
On Flat Fork.
Yeah.
You were telling me earlier your grandpa told you some tales. Do you remember anything that he told you?
Grandpa never did talk a lot. He'd get on and stuff. And of course, they came, lived over on Mill Creek in that area a whole lot. Talk about some feuds that went on over there.
Remember any of the feuds, anything about the feuds?
Well, it talked about one on the alley and there was Timberlands and the Ridden got into it. I think it was the Ridden. Anyway, he was having a colored Methodist church at the Bureau of Hell Angels, still there today. They were having a communion or something, I don't know. We got into it, Chamberlain shot a Redman, a Redman shot a Chamberlain right through the church, right through the window or something.
In the church?
It was in the churchyard. Right next to the church, I can remember that. And that feud evidently went on for years. My grandmother Tully, my grandmother, that'd be my great grandmother, she lived in that area at that time. And I heard her talk about that feud. It went on up to a few years ago. The Clarks got in somehow or another, the Redmonds and the Clarkins to fight over. Remember this having a coder reunion down in Lewisburg here. I can remember it. And one of the Clarks went down there after one of the Redmonds pulled a gun, and evidently it broke up the reunion at the colored church there in Lewisburg at that time. And I knew one of the guys, he got scared and got underneath the car. He is.
I don't call that scared, I call that being conscious.
And heard about that feud. Then over Hell Angels, another deal happened. This colored guy lived over there and worked for people. And they left, moved away from here, left or something, and the artist told you I'd take care of some sheep while he was gone. And they're supposed to pay him so many dollars to take care of the sheep that winter. They went on and he never got his money. So he was amazing one day, and this guy came running, walking by or riding by in a buggy, and he had this big fancy coat on. He took the coat off of it. What he owed. Well, anyway, he took the coat. Anyway, the guy swore out a warrant or whatever he did to him. He got the sheriff after him for stealing his coat. And he chased the guy over the country, and he hold himself up in the barn over there. Black guy. Had a gun, a lot of ammunition. He holed up in that barn and kept the posse off of him for a good little bit. And finally, one of the guys that knowed him real well talked him into giving up. He said, "Oh, we won't do nothing to you." And when he opened the barn door, somebody blew the boom on and killed him. And he came around and moved my grandfather, said he shot him. But it was a dirty deal.
Yeah.
I didn't know that. Black guy got the blame for everything. He ended up dead.
That, what, probably the
1800s,
mid
1800s? I'd say late 18s. I'd say the 1900s. Yeah, but heard my granddad talk about it. She was a guy. He thought it was all black guy. Of course, they were raised up with the colored families over on Mill Creek. That's where the Ruicks, the Lallys, the Dodges, Marines, I don't know how many families around here were reared or went on in the Mill Creek area. And the kids all went around together, played together. And still, some of the guys I know talk about when we used to live on Mill Creek.
Someday I gotta go around Mill Creek and see what all.
Colored family over there, I always thought a lot of it was the Turner family. Watt Turner. Called Mr. Watt. And I heard some tales about him too. Mr. Watt. He married this woman named Martha. Martha's
first two, getting killed in holes, failing the scold, being scolded.
Yeah.
And Watt married her, and I was accused of, after this happened, Watt married her, and I was accused of Watt pushing him in the scold, being one. He said, obviously, you said, you know I didn't do that. You get all the tales on me. Watt and Martha were too good, because I believe there were some good tales on them. Watt and Martha went to town buggy one night, and Watt got drunk. Come up a rainstorm. Old horse, he wouldn't come home that rainstorm. Martha made Watt get off and lead the horse home. Martha and Watt get fights, live over on what's called a walking farm, where my grandfather lived. Watt come in drunk one night, and Martha wouldn't let him stay in the house. He said, I'm going to Mr. Walton had a boar hog fast and sitting in my butt. He was bad. Watt said, I'm going up there and sleep with the boar hog. And Martha said, nah, I said, you better not to eat you up. So Watt left. Next morning, my grandfather went out to feed. Went up there under the lake, Watt in the stripping room, laying up on a little boar hog sleep.
He slept with that boar hog.
Well, he slept with boar hog never bothered him, and he'd eat anybody else up. But evidently the boys used to torment, he was the only colored fella in that vicinity, and evidently the boys used to torment the time out of it. But anyway, Mr. Walton was a big landowner over there and had several people that worked for him. He had some boys painting Watt's house. And Watt and Martha had been gone, they took off every service. The boys were painting the house, and they thought it would be a pretty good prank to pull on Mr. Watt. Put a snake in his bed or something. Mr. Watt slept upstairs, and Martha slept downstairs. And one of them, Albert Bell, was a guy named Tam, upstairs went and took a piece of hole, hauled it up in Watt's bed. Watt and Martha come in that night, all drunk up, both of them are wrecked. And Martha went to bed, Mr. Watt went upstairs, went to bed and pulled the sheet back and seen it holding the bed and took his old pistol and shot through the bed, went through the pole, plumb down, almost did his wife. I can remember Mr. Watt and Aunt Martha. And if you ever been in their house, it was something to see.
Why?
There a time or two, it was kind of unbelievable. Well, they had, of course, everybody had their own chickens, but they raised chickens, they had little pens out in the yard. When Aunt Martha set the table in the kitchen, she had to shoo the chickens off the table. Now, I ain't kidding. The thing amazed me, I went in what they call the living room. And, Aunt Martha had a dresser drawer pulled out with an old hen sitting in the dresser drawer. Now, there's no imagination to this. I saw it. And that's the way the people live. But half these people thought the world and all of them were hard workers and everything. It was just their lifestyle.
We didn't have to go far to get the eggs.
Right. The old hen was sitting in the dresser drawer. Never forget that. We had little back stick pins made out in the yard. kept her chickens named to me. Real funny for me. But there was really some good tales told on them.
Now they're both gone, right?
Yeah, and they had a son named John Walker, and he's gone. I don't know where's any more. Evidently, some daughters maybe still live. Of course, my uncle's probably knew him. I think he got a daughter living in Cincinnati, maybe. That's, but Waddy was something else. And I don't know if anybody told you about when I was younger about some of the old colored people around here or not. Uh-uh. Some of them fascinated me. It was one called Yock Horseman.
What was his name?
Yock. We called him Yock. He lived in a little cabin out at the Lake and Pike on the Sanford Parker farm, along from Sanford's uncle at that time, Mr. Roth. Mr. Yock passed out there. He always carried a sack on his back. And every kid made a little scared of him. Carried that sack. Everybody told him he had somebody in that sack. But he'd come to town and get groceries in the sack. That's why he'd carry him home. Always wore boots. I remember him very well. And he had a brother named Jake. That was a town bootlegger. You'd have to remember Mr. Jake. Or know him to appreciate him, really. Mr. Jake, he was about a foul-mouthed man as he was ever around. But Mr. Jake, he'd make his weekly trips to the Al Drugstore in Maple and get two shopping bags full of whiskey and bring my bootleg on weekends. So much half pint kept hid on the floor. I'd been down there and bought it. I think, $2 for a half pint?
Good stuff, then.
The cheapest whiskey you could buy, he probably paid 75 cents for it.
He was drinking it.
And,
for medicinal purposes.
Mr. Jake always carried a pistol with him. Some of the things he'd tell you wouldn't believe. Now, he was a brother and he had another brother named Dave. And Mr. Dave was quite polite, kind of a black dog. And let's see, Mr. Dave's wife was a fan. They were religious, real white type people. Now, y'all, Mr. Jake, he was.
They get along with the other one?
Oh yeah, they all got along with it. Mr. Jake was a little short headed sit fella. And when I was young running around, he used to hitchhike a ride to town on Saturday night and get his whiskey and run back and get his bootleg. But he's something else. And then there was another coach that I remember named Buck Bowden. He worked up here for Miss Lid Hawking. And he milked. Worked the garden, took care of the yard and all that kind of stuff. He always carried a basket under his arm, and he wouldn't get that basket long to live. It's like an egg basket, had two handles on it, carried on his arm. I remember him walking up down the road with the plane.
You carry anything in particular in his basket?
I don't never know what he had in that basket. He always carried that basket. But Bowen, and we'll forget him long to live. Mm-hmm. And some of the other characters around here, I tell you. I can remember some of them. Tom Beckett, he was a town constable down here at one time. He was a decrepit old fellow that lived before the bank. He thought the town belonged to him. And had a public well in town. And of course, the water got short in the country. Everybody come to town, that public well get water. He thought that well belonged to him and it was going to pump it dry. And I seen him run a mini one off there. He was something else. He did. And his fellow Phillips was living there in town. Up over the grease to him, old girl on his name.
What was his name?
Bob Phillips. D and Bob. Mr. D was his father. And Bob, he talked about how hard he worked all his life and what he doing. Kind of windy. He drove a 39 Ford through the 37 flood. And he hauled 40 tons of loose hay up Mayfield on a Model A Ford truck. And you'd have to listen to him.
Anybody done it?
He wore felt top boots in summertime. Dirty. You couldn't believe some of the old people were there, I tell you. But it's amazing. There was Mr. Giplow. He sat on the corner whittling. Whistle, drove the school bus. Sam Maston, he used to sit over on the presbytery in church, sharpen his knife. Mark's still there on the church step where he sharpened his knife. And he whittled. And he was all the time doing little honor tricks to people.
Like what?
Oh, messing up a car so it wouldn't run or something. Somebody else would get blamed for it. And he'd laugh about it. Now, he run a garage amazing, Sam did.
And he'd mess it up on purpose?
Yeah, he'd do it and laugh about it. So, I don't know where he messed it up on purpose all the time, because he run a garage. And he might have done it to get beaten. But he run the garage over where Mr. Woods is. To get the sun shining right, you can see his name on the front of it. S.E. Maston, International. Get an international truck leadership. That's over international truck.
Now, is that Mrs. Maston?
That's Mrs. Maston's husband. Now, she can tell you a whole lot, too. That's Kenny's sister. But some of the older people, I can really remember. One that I really remember heard a lot of talk about was Mr. Ben Lowe. And that's Ruth Payne's father. He lived there somewhere, about where Ruth lives now. He took care of the cemetery. Right back behind Merlita's house, he had chickens, had chicken coops back in the cemetery. He kept chickens back there. Well, anyway, the colored church down the alley was having a revival. And Mr. Ben always wore his long time, tail nightgowns, and I've been told this now. One night, Mr. Ben went to bed and forgot about he hadn't fastened up his chickens. So he runs over to the cemetery.
In his long tail nightgown.
His long tail nightgown, fastens up the chicken coming out of the cemetery, and the revival was letting out. And people all coming out of the little alley there. Well, they said black people were scared all over me. He's scared.
We had our own ghost.
No, I remember telling that tale several. One I got to tell you about was Milan boys.
Heard
my granddad talk about them many times, laugh about them. The Milan boys. Mr. Charles Hughes told me about them. Now the boys live back up here. Mr. Charlie Bowden on his farm now. It's between 68 and Raymond Road. That's down on Abson Creek, on the little farm back there, and evidently the boys just a bubble off center. Anyway, some of the first tale I ever heard told on them, my grandfather lived over on Raymond Road, and at that time, and the Lanny boys lived way back off the road there. It was real cold in the wintertime. Mr. Den Hanley on the farm where Mr. Dorothy Butler lives now. And they come up there, Mr. Den, one in, go back there and see about his sister. Had a sister live back there with him. Sister was sick. We go back there and see about it. So Mr. Den, evidently it was real cold and bad, so he went out and hitched up the horses and sled. Got my granddad to go with him, and then went back there to see about it. And said this once as soon as they went in the house, they knew she was dead. Said they had her sitting up in a chair and had a big fire built in the fireplace. Big bowl of cornbread in her lap, glass of milk sitting there on the table or something. And said, Mr. Hanley looked at one of the land boys, I think it's Tom. His name was Mr. Tom. Said, your sister's dead. Said, one thing about it, she didn't freeze to death, she didn't starve to death. I heard my granddad tell me anyway they had to bring her out or sledding horses. But anyway, they could go on Raymond Road and come out this way. And they rode a horse to May's leg. Of course, that's when automobiles evidently first come around. And the horses they rode were scared of automobiles. So when they get to May's leg, they tie the horse up here about the Baptist church and walk to May's leg. Boys all the time aggravated and they were scared of the shadow of it. So heard him tell about one night one of them rode his horse from out of there. And he tied it and he went down Maple Leaf and done whatever he was doing. And anyway, and took a piece of tobacco cotton and folded it and put it underneath the saddle, somewhere or another. And old man boy came up the road, got jumped on his horse, took off, and the tobacco cotton started coming and folded. The tobacco cotton was 75 or 100 feet long. Well, the faster he rode, the further the cotton coming. And he kept looking back, looking at that cotton. They said he liked to run the horse this year, huh? But Melanda must have been something else. I heard Mr. Huber talk about, of course, I can remember when the Greyhound bus went through there. Made four trips a day. Two to Maysville. They came, evidently came from Lexington. They stopped at Carlisle and Millsburg. Fairview, Maysville. I know you could buy tickets down the store and ride the bus. A lot of people rode the bus. Maysville, Washington. Two went down and two come back. Well, I rode them, I know. But anyways, my landing board, you could go right here and flag the Greyhound bus down. So they found out about you could flag the bus down. They won't go down, so they come out and you flag the bus down. The bus driver would stop, pick him up. He'd get to Maysville, you know, and he'd get off and say, thank you, much obliged for that. Nice bus you got here. Go off and never pay a fire. And they done, evidently done a several times. So the drivers got tired of it. One day, when he got ready to stop, he had a little buzzer. A little cord at the top of the bus, he pulled and blow a buzzer, and the bus driver knew where to stop. The bus driver said, I'll fix that dude. So he got up here where he got off the bus at. He blew that buzzer, you know, and the bus driver just kept moving. I don't know how far he took it. But anyway, he didn't have any more trouble. The landing boys riding the bus with us. This went on for a long time. We let them get by. But of course, the boys, the say, didn't have all their buttons. But some of the tales they tell on them, some believe some things they do. But the thing about the cotton, scaring them.
Can you imagine what he must have thought?
He looked back and the top just kept coming back. I reckon it kept getting longer and he kept riding for
him. Are they still alive or are they
no,
long
all gone?
Gone?
Charlie Bolton owns a little farm back there.
Well, I'm glad she didn't freeze to death though or starve to death.
Hit her all covered, let a big quilt go. Remember my granddaddy laughed up there.
Oh, shoot. This was quite a thriving town at one time, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. I could, of course, in my time, I can remember when it was 4 or 5 grocery stores. 1, 2, 3, 4, about 5 filling stations, maybe. Farm implement dealership, bank, even a feed mill.
Where was the feed mill?
It's under where Mr. Kitchen lives.
That was a feed mill at one time?
Yeah, guy had a shell bladder. She does.
Who?
Shell Buchanan. Under feed mill there, where Mr. Kitchen got his postal shop. You can buy horse feed, rabbit feed, or I bought many. Yes. Found a rabbit food from him, cow feed, sold hands, new way feed, and it was good. He had an old grinder, or mill, sitting down in the basement. An old single cylinder engine, as well as I remember. Boy, when he was grinding feed, that thing, you hear a crack all the way left. He just far about every 5 or 6 times to turn over. Boy, made all the racket.
How come you think businesses left Maysville? What caused
well,
it?
Automobile. Well, I said one implement dealership, it was two. Jimmy Reese run one there at Alstown.
Where was that?
International, where Catch Holding Building is. So one on this side, White Court.
Yeah.
Mr. Jimmy Reese had a business there. He sold appliances, had a bottle gas business, and farm machinery. He had a booming business. International dealership down in the town was booming. This was back in the late 40s and early 50s.
You said there was three. I know where there was two filling. There's two filling stations.
All right, we're he and his name, that was Jolly.
Yeah.
Here's one. All right, where Mr. Jimmy Reese is, the tanks. All right, where Kathy Holden is, the tanks. The tanks are still there. There's one there. Okay, up there where Wade Gibbons in on the boat hole, there's one there.
Yeah.
Get gas from there. All right, across the street over where Mr. Woods is. If I ain't mistaken, the tanks are still there and the oil is still there. You can get gas there. And down to the implement place, Major Lick Implement, or the International Board of Ships, you can get gas there.
And it's all just disappeared. You think it's just because transportation became so it was became easier for them to get to the larger places?
Competition, yeah.
I know we had a newspaper at one time.
Yeah, that was before my day.
Yeah. When
but to see Mr. Taylor White run the grocery store. I can remember when Peter Gray. Guy called him run that little wood Janet did man. Across there in that Reese building. Ray Brooks Birdman went over there. And down there were Geico Electronics, we go to the store there. And Chris Pepper's brother and him run one over in the kitchen building for a while. Then there's one down the other end of town where this store used to be. One there temporarily. Where Jenny Reed was man. Where else was it? I reckon it was off.
Going back on behind the bank.
That was Mr. Brooks' words. He moved from Reese building over to that old house.
What old house? Was the house
well,
gone?
Where the bank parking lot is.
Yeah.
It's Ray Brooks' were on the house there. And they moved the grocery store over in it. And that's the only place you could take bologna off the screen. They kept the refrigerator and cut it. It did bologna. The only place in Major Lick could get ice cream coming one time.
Remember.
The only place we could get comic books.
That was important.
That's where all the boys went to get comic books. He's the only one stayed open all day on Sunday. It's the only place you could get cinnamon balls for a penny.
No.
Get a hell of an ice cream cone for 15 cents.
Remember when he was kids, mom used to have dinner. Mom didn't have driver's license.
And you could take her comic books, you read them, take them down there, trade them in, same price, and get a new one.
By gosh, that'd be the place I'd head for then. I was a big comic book fan.
But if the place finally just fell in, Mr. Ray got. I think Mr. Ray's with us, still living, was Lena. She was Lena Darnold. And I seen a picture somewhere the other day, showed part of the old Darnold Hotel.
In that book.
It's in that book. Darnold Hotel, set there where Jolly's Garage was, or where it is. Mm-hmm.
There was other hotels at one time in Mays Lake, weren't there?
Yeah, it was it. Her dad and her talked about it.
I'll hold it down. Have you ever heard any tales about a Frawley house? Heard that from somebody. Tobacco was always the main, of course, one time hemp was, I know.
Yeah.
But then tobacco took...
Back during World War II, a lot of hemp drove this country. Grow before the government, he'd have a license. My father had a license. And most of what was grown in this country was grown for seed. And they took the seed and raised the hemp, which you used hemp to make rope with.
Yeah.
And I remember my father growed it in the war back in 41, 42. I just barely do remember.
How come you had to have a license?
Well, you had to have a license to produce it. They evidently knew it was.
Even then
they knew it, yeah. I remember Dad and them would cut it and shocked it, and then they went and took tarpaulins and laid it out and beat the seed out on tarpaulin.
You know where they ship them?
But I don't know where to ship it to or anything about it. Really, I just don't remember, but I know I heard a lot of people talk about raising it. Well, my father raised it, they raised it down on Long Neck. Just
it was raised on my farm, I know, where I'm from.
Raised.
Yeah.
And some raised it evidently for the rope, but what we raised was the seed. We had to produce the seed for the government.
And then tobacco took over after the war?
Yeah, tobacco was the main crop. Tobacco and livestock. And of course, the one time, probably, of course, you know, being from around here, bluegrass, Kentucky bluegrass is a big crop. But the imports and
what they do with
foreign competition has put us all out of business.
I mean, great, right?
For Kentucky, the seed? Kentucky bluegrass seed. You hear about Kentucky bluegrass, don't you?
Yes, I'm allergic to it.
Uh-huh, you ain't got no business around here.
I know it.
At one time, Kentucky bluegrass, well, it was our biggest income. A whole lot bigger than tobacco.
Here in Maze Lick, around Maze Lick area?
Yeah, for certain farmers, yeah. They went into it. We still got our strippers. But foreign competition and imports just put us plumb out. They could ship it over here cheaper and we could even have it cleaned.
How would you get the seed out of it?
It takes a special cleaning process. The closest cleaners around here was in Paris.
I mean, would you take a piece of sod out with the grass in it?
We had strippers with teeth on them. It'd turn in rotation and pull the head off the seed. You need to take it and dry it. See, bluegrass is a real fine seed. Pull the head off, you wouldn't get but maybe 80 or 90% of the seed, you wouldn't get it all if they stripped it.
Now, that's in the ground. I mean, the stripper would run through the...
Run on top of the ground. See, okay. Bluegrass will get getting any high. It's not cut or anything. And you strip the heads off of it. Right after, that's where it gets its name. It's in bloom, it's real blue looking. Really called Kentucky bluegrass.
It gets a bloom on it.
It's got a bloom on it, it's real blue looking. And when it starts drying up and getting brown, before it starts to shed, that's when you strip it. Then we have to take it and dry it. We hand dry it. A lot of times we put it in windrows out in fields, we put it in barns, and air dry. You have to turn it by hand and all this food. Then we sack it in these great big sacks. Then we take the purse. There were several cleaners up there. All the cleaners that was ever made to clean bluegrass were hand-built. There's one left in Paris I know of today. It's Woodford Spears. And it's still operable. They don't operate anymore. But very delicate process of getting seed in. And one time we were selling seed for $1.50 a pound. And it got down to something like 30 cents. It wasn't a way we could make it. Now it's up to about $2 a pound.
Would it be profitable to grow it here again?
It could be. I don't know. The problem is now as we're more diversified, we've got more livestock than that. When you got bluegrass, you can't have livestock.
Yeah, I can see why that is.
I know. One time we sold... Well, back in the early 50s, $40,000 was bluegrass seed off this farm at one time. $40,000 back in the early 50s was a lot of money to come off of a 300-acre farm.
Yeah.
And we go out and do a lot around the neighbors now. We handle a lot of seed, Clark's, Parker's, the Finches. It was a booming business in the state of Kentucky, but the business has completely left. We lost it.
But I would think, you know, if you get back up to $2 a pound, it'd be profitable maybe for them to do it.
Well, it could be, but we'd have to change our system for them.
Yeah.
And I don't know how long. Out west where they raise it and over in Britain where they raise so much of it, their conditions are a lot more favorable over and they got a different way of
doing it. Well, now that the tobacco crop, though, is going down, is there much hope of this? Well, I want to change this tape because I want to ask you this. I'm going to turn this tape.
protection shipping.
Raised first one for you.
Raised what?
Emerald Crown. Emerald Crown Bitch. We done some for the U.S. Agriculture Department.
What is it? I'm not a farm girl.
It's this vegetation that's got a real purple bloom in it you see along the roadways. Along the state highway, right away. You've seen it.
Probably.
It's all
yeah.
Long.
Now it's right now. It's real thick.
It's real brown.
Oh, okay. All right, yeah.
It's real pretty. It's ground best. We're the first one in this country to raise.
Why?
For U.S. For experimental purposes.
To put along roadsides?
Yeah, where the ground was really highly erodible.
This is John Larry's great-grandmother. It'd be Larry Davis's great-grandmother.
And her name was?
Sally McGee, and then this is John Larry's grandmother. You're hearing talking about his papa, Grandpa Dodge. This is her mother. This lady here is. This is Molly McGee Dodge.
Yeah.
And that's Eddie Dodge. And then this is her mother, which is, and she's pretty.
She's a beautiful lady.
Sally Rob McGee.
She's
kin to the Robs.
She was very lovely.
Isn't that pretty? Look at the picture. I get a kick out
of
that.
Yeah, she was pretty.
Yeah. John Larry's grandparents had, I don't know how many years they were married, but this was on their 50th.
50th wedding.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that was on their 50th anniversary.
Is there any chance they could go back to growing this vetch?
We tried it with not much profit. We've got to, we made profit out for a few years, but we was the initiator of it, and we go for the government, and they found us a market for it, and everything. It's not that much profit in the end.
What do you think's going to happen around Maize Liquid with tobacco? Since it's, I mean, that's going downhill,
well,
too.
Well, people want to diversify more. That's going to cause, there's going to be less farmers, I believe.
You think we're going to lose some farmers around here?
Yeah, we're going to lose farmers. Diversify more, and well, just like me, one time I could make a living off of 300 acres here. Now I'm farming 850 and not making as much money as it was then.
That's true.
And you're going to see a lot of that.
You don't think the tobacco is going
to
come back?
The guys that stay in is going to be a lot more efficient. Diversify, they're going to have more than tobacco, with corn, and going to have a little bit of everything. And they're going to be farming a lot more acreage, I believe that's what's going to happen. I don't see any other way out.
Do you think
back? I believe it's on its way. It'll never be completely gone, but it'll never be the market like it is.
Do you think the older farmers around here would be willing to give up the tobacco?
Well, they're either going to sell out, give up, or do something, because they're not able to take care of their sale. Mm-hmm. Of course, as long as few young guys they can lease and rent to, they can still hang on. But a lot of them are unable to do it themselves. If they can't lease and rent it, they're either going to sell out or forget it.
There's a moral problem here. Now, you and I both smoke, and yet our government is telling us, and the Surgeon General and everybody is saying that how horrible it is. How do the farmers feel about selling something that's potentially life-threatening? Does that question ever come up when the guys get together?
It does, because of course we always go back at them and they're saying anything about whiskey or beer. I mean, they don't say how many people that's killed, how many families that's affected.
So there doesn't seem to be any moral dilemma as far as those who grow
liquor or dope or anything. Not to me, it does.
Well, I know, but I was talking to...
I had a questionnaire on the phone the other night asking me all this junk.
Yeah.
How I felt about it.
Well, we tend to believe... I tend to believe it's free choice.
I mean, well, it's your choice.
I'm smoking,
smoke
too. Yeah.
You can take dope.
Yeah.
You can drink yourself to death.
You can kill yourself any way you choose.
But it's not a question that you hear when the guys get together
talk
about farming.
Well, I suppose it's mainly because we raised.
Yeah, you
don't think about that. Fine. Well, you can take anything. You can go, a lot of these people that we hear on TV, like to ask them, what do they do for a living? What does it do to people? If it's not chemical companies that are doing things to you. You can take television. What do you think television's doing to our young people?
Well, you're not going to get any argument out of me. I'm just curious.
There's a lot of destruction.
Well, see, here's the big thing about fish.
Mary's hairdressing, I don't know what it is.
You're all about fish, good for you and all that. Yeah. You know what these fish are getting in streams, the chemical.
We don't eat Lake Superior fish.
Or Lake Michigan. Chemical content in these fish is unbelievable.
And they're telling you to eat fish.
And as Clackner set up, the American Farm Bureau set up a little. He said the Eskimos eat fish, and their average lifespan is 45 years old, too. Of course, it's like cold rubber, I understand that.
They don't die of heart failure because of heart disease, so they don't live old enough to die. Right,
of heart disease.
But, I mean, there's good and bad to everything.
Well, I hate, you know, Maize Lick has deteriorated since there's been...
all these small towns have, you know, I think TV, automobile, consolidation of your schools. What really hurt? I know Maize Lick was when they moved to school. Maize Lick was boom town when they moved to school.
So when the school left, that...
When the school left, I know Elijah. A lot of the towns, Sardis, Orson's even done the same thing. It's deteriorated since the school day. When we head up Minerva and Orangeburg, you can drive through them now, I don't even know where they're at. Of course, the roads move, change. And
do you think towns like Maize Lick will come back, though? People are saying, let's get back to nature, let's get back to a slower pace of life.
No, if there's no jobs or a way to make a living, they won't.
Yeah, there'll be some.
Of course, this is where you were raised. This is where you've raised your family.
Yeah, but look, I mean, there's been houses built in Maize Lick.
Sure, yeah, there are people.
People getting tired of the rat race in the city, and they want out. A lot of people do.
But they still
got
to be able to make a living.
Yeah, still, but they come out here to live. But they go back to town to work.
See, you think that towns like Maize Lick will become like suburbs, like you have in your large cities, only suburbs of your...
Yeah, just be suburbs. Because I remember when it was about 4 miles from Orson to Maple, you didn't see none but farmhouses and barns. Now look what's between Orson and Maple.
Yeah. Well, a lot of that's happened in the 3 years I've been here.
Yeah. Like it.
Yeah.
I remember going around the curves on the old road, see how fast you could take them and all that booze.
How fast could you take them? Did you always make it?
Yeah.
Oh.
Once, twice a day.
You want a personal history? We give you one of John Larry.
I was just curious how many times he made those curves. I've heard of others who haven't.
Yeah, and he loaded his car down one time with concrete block or was
rock.
It? Rock.
This one, I had 49 Ford. Friend of mine had it. Had it all fancied up. Back then, took all the chrome off of us and all that. Said we want chrome. Real fancy paint job. And it was fly. A friend of mine had it, so he wanted something better, so he sold it. And meantime, the boy tried out wrecked it, but they fixed it and I bought it back. It had 100-some thousand miles on it. Then.
Now what? When
and
are we talking?
I bought it, and I fixed it up a little bit, and I run another 100,000, and I wrecked it, and I completely redid it. And we figured the car had right at 300,000 miles or better on it when I got rid of it.
Well, you don't have it anymore?
No, blue 49 Ford. To give anything for it. We redone the end. Inside, Mom sold the upholstery. I bought Naugahyde plastic whenever it first come out. Oh, that was great stuff. Mom sold the interior together for me, and we put it in. Local garage owner painted it. I only get $295 for the car to start with. It cost me $230 to do that. But, it took none of that car. And I traded for a fix. And that car was bad. She had the motor rebuilt in and all hell would fly. It'd run fast in seconds, would have.
And I have flown with it many times.
Flown low.
And honey, I got me a 57 Chevrolet. 57 Chevrolet 283. There wasn't nothing around here to touch it. Nothing.
He's telling us in front of his son, yes. Oh.
Not nothing,
that's your fault. How'd you two meet?
At John Wayne School.
Out here at Maysley?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, in school.
Mom did a lot of school hopping. She went from Sardis to Maysley to Aberdeen.
Well, see, Maysley had the high school, of course. So yeah. I went 12 years there. But see, they consolidated Lewisburg, Sardis, Washington, all together.
Yeah.
So when kids got to our 8th grade, they all came to Maysley. That's how we all got.
That's how you got.
That's how I got from Sardis to Maysley.
When were you two married then?
In 59.
I graduated
in 59. Been married a lot of years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But
anyway, the little blue car was really great, and then he got fixed it in Chevrolet, and I moved to high. And we took many a fast trip.
Getting you home on time, right?
Well, I don't think he had to be home. I don't remember him being home.
No, I'm talking about you being home.
Me, yes, me. But then after he left me, a lot of times he took
we wouldn't do nothing to race up down
the new hill. Race up down the new hill, and no, what I was thinking about, when we lived over Sardis and we'd have to go home, we went to Maysville, see, to do anything, then you'd go back home. You go ever go back across 62? At Washington. We used to drive home in the dark with the lights up.
Oh, yeah.
That was part
of
the fun.
It'd say it'd be five or six of us. It'd mm-hmm. be two in front, two behind. Two, 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 no lights. Mm-hmm. Side to side.
Side to side.
Wow.
See somebody's lights. Follow them, send them, follow them, lights on. Sometimes you wouldn't turn them on, whoever's coming to secure the help. Oh, yeah, I had run off the road, go for hands, shit, everything.
You were not well-liked at that time, I
Well, one night, we was going down, a bunch of us, we was pulling that cable. Virgil Gibbert, running the garage here in town, that's where all the boys hung out. He had a body shop down there.
Where?
Where Mr. Woods is.
Oh, okay.
I always listen to spending 100 things.
Mm-hmm. We was all going down one night, we had a state patrolman, a pretty good friend, all of us. He was sitting down there on patrol that night. And we popped around the curve, here he said. Six or seven of us. We was all racing, hell running as hard as we go. And we said, boy, the guy's name is Chester Hart. The boy Hart's gonna get us tonight. So hell wasn't none of us let up on. We just kept trucking. And we got to Washington, we won every race. And we never did see Hart. So the next night we was all at the garage, he hauling, you know. Here come Hart up his police cruiser. Got out, you know, he come. Reached the back seat and got this hubcap come walking. He said, what's one of you boys' hubcap belong to? Said, I wasn't about to take that damn food last night. I said, you won't break your neck, it was hard, but I won't break mine trying to catch
you. Well, who did the hubcap belong to, John?
Bobby Grace. It come off and went right in front of the cruiser.
He admitted it?
Yeah.
The trouble was, they used to run the tires. They take corners with them and take it. The tire was folded under so far. The pavement would catch a hubcap and trip it off.
Oh, we'd
throw hubcaps off. I always thought you were a kind, meek soul growing up.
Oh, really?
I tell you what.
I know another life you want to hear.
Looking back, there's a bunch of us that hung around here. I was lucky some of them could kill.
Yeah. And if your kids had done it, what would you have done to them?
Shit wasn't nothing to do. They probably would have been killed.
Well, I appreciate you letting me.
He almost done it down too.
You had
put it this way, I ain't done nothing. I never did driver he was.
Of course, see, we made cars for Lynn to take curves with. I mean, we fixed them so he could really, they really corner. Of course, that's all we had was curves.
We took amazing. He's always talking. When I was in school, they used to jack him up.
Yeah.
He was. They'd take a set of pocket crate underneath of him, heat springs and drop them.
Uh-huh.
We won't sit around on the road and just close them, yeah.
Sure did.
Of course, we couldn't get white sidewalk hard.
Lynn's in the white generation.
She had white sidewalk hard.
Lynn, did you do anything like that?
Not me. As far as my kids know, I'm innocent.
Boy, when they come out with these clip-on little round rings, the one around behind the ring.
Yeah.
Oh, we thought we had some.
Bill bought a pair of those.
Shit, honey, we cut them off. Go in the curve and rings, cut them off.
Well, I got all this on tape for your grandchildren and your great-grandchildren. And I want to thank you for letting me tape it. I'll cut you off before you get in any more trouble.
Anyway, I had this hot fix in Chevrolet. It was the fastest thing in the country. Well, anyway, I took my girlfriend home that night.
And who was your girlfriend?
Want to marry.
You just say that loud?
Well, it used to be a hangout down on Hazel Hill where Ashton's feature all is.
Yeah.
It used to be a truck stop.
I don't think he's going to.
And that's where we hung out at. And we'd race up and down the hill. So anyway, one night I took her home and I stopped out there. And the boys, two or three out there, want me to take them back to Aberdeen. So I said, okay, we'll go back to Aberdeen. So we go back to Aberdeen. Started across the bridge. Poured on it, Dodge. I had a low gear and there's three cars running. And I pulled out past three of them. I shifted the second. I was running about over 100.
That a Maislick bridge?
Maislick Aberdeen bridge.
Maislick Aberdeen.
I was running over 100 when when you go up over the hump and you see down the other side?
Mm-hmm. And the wall at the end?
There's a wreck on the bridge. One way traffic. And they heard me. They heard me coming. Well, anyway, they blocked traffic coming the other way and let me go through, but they shot at me five times. Said I wasn't trying to stop, honey. Head off four wheels locked. Hell, I slid on half of them.
They shot at you?
Shot me five times.
Shot at him.
One patrol was shot in the air, the other was shot right in front of the car because you could see the fire come out of the gun.
I'm surprised.
And two of these boys with me, they were bad characters. Both been bad age. You know what they done? They laid down the floorboard. Cop coming on down there, what married you? I said, trying to get this thing stopped. He said, stop the hell. The old car was sitting there, I had it all hopped up and sitting there running about half all in when he was just sitting there jumping. He said, what's the matter? I said, the accelerator stuck. He said, stuck hell. I said, you come here. He laughed and jerked me out of the plane, took me over to the police station. Left my car sitting on the bridge running. Got over to the police station, the guy. It was a cousin to my dad or somebody who was on the police force, and he knew me. And they gave me a citation to come to court and all that foolishness. And
wouldn't know why.
And he said, he don't worry about it. So I know. He said, he'll be back. Just let him go. So they took me back over and let me have my car. The boys were still sitting in it. So I come
home. How long they waited.
That was on about Saturday night. He'd go to court on Monday.
And who helped you pay for
it? Didn't have a dime. My name on it. Went to court. You let me have what? Your week's paycheck, wasn't it? $60 or 2 weeks, whatever it was. What did you let me have, 40 or 60?
About $60. So it must have been 2 weeks. That's high.
Well, I thought they'd only fine me about $50. I had enough money. Got down there to find me $104.40, but I didn't have it. So I called my buddies at the garage, and they brought me down the rest of them to get me out of hock.
Let's put it this way. He would not have called his mother.
That was my next question.
No.
Mom and Dad never did know it.
I bet you do.
They
never
said anything about it. I never said about it today. Buddy, I knew if they found out, I'd be in the ground.
I can't believe you let that down there.
Sure.
I mean, you told that, so they could do that.
Oh,
yeah. This is part.
What was it? See, when I started finding out stuff about him, when I got to college, I started work for one of his buddies used to run with Bobby Gray. I went down there and got a job, worked for Bobby down at the service station in Maine.
They done a lot of stuff that I didn't do.
They's all the time. They get down there in the evenings at the clothes and they get drinking beer. We sit down there and sit beer and they get to count stories up on the cell. I got to learn a lot about it.
I take what you learned a lot, but you didn't learn. Those characters drank, and he didn't. What everything
all
he
was, you know, Bobby never drank too much to get out.
He never drank, but I remember someplace on this tape we talked about.
I thought that's the reason I made the question.
Now on the tape,
I knew Jake had the whiskey.
Uh-huh.
Like, he used to ride with him and he would get it, to get it. And a few times I brought him home. And I used to make side trips down there and get whiskey for people.
Oh, okay.
Sounds good.
Yeah.
Because Jake would sell whiskey to everybody. Yeah. And he knew me.
Make it sound a little better.
And I go down there and get it. It's old cheap whiskey, what it was. But I go down and get whiskey for everybody. Give for Noah, make more whiskey. $10 down to get, I can get it. Old Jake saved me, heck, he done have it out. He had to get it down on the floor. Had a rug man on the hole.
I wonder if that hole's still there.
Like half birthday.
Oh.
The low half down out.
Turn that thing off.
Okay. Thanks, Dave.